You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 143, Atlantis, the Lost Empire. Can we get some Helga workout videos, please? Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. My name is Chelsea. This is Morgan.
Hello, hello, hello.
We are your go-to fans for all things Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. The Animation Addicts Podcast is just a group of friends. We sit around, we pick one animated movie every couple weeks, and we decide that we're just going to talk all about it. All about everything.
The ins, the outs. You are going to know everything about Atlantis by the time you're done with this. Well, or at least...
everything that we know.
A fair chunk of it, yes.
You're going to know everything that we know about Atlantis. Or that Wikipedia, IMDb, or the interwebs have told us.
Special bonus features and other interviews. Yes, that's basically our sources. So, Atlantis, the Lost Empire. This is a patron pick episode by one of our patrons. It's by Maggie. So, thank you, Maggie. Her first episode that she wanted to pick was Titan AE. But we already had reviewed that was another patron pick. So her second pick was Atlantis. Both similar vibes, kind of. I mean, not necessarily like one is space, but they're both kind of like these adventure, and they kind of have similar looks, and they came out in similar eras. So yes. She has a...
It's that 2D, 3D hybrid.
Yes, with the very stylized characters with the jaw, you know, the characters with their jaws that are very angular.
It's true.
You know.
It's true.
So let's dive down and find some Atlantis, shall we?
Let's.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Now, we've all heard of the legend of Atlantis. Pure fantasy. Well, that is where you'd be wrong.
That young Thatch gets crazier every year.
I can prove Atlantis exists.
I'm sure of it this time.
Milo James Thatch. I'm acting on behalf of my employer, who has a most intriguing proposition for you.
It's the Shepherd's Journal. This journal is the key to finding the lost continent of Atlantis.
I'll never believe you.
I will find Atlantis on my own. I mean, if I have to rent a rowboat.
This is exactly what I wanted to hear.
But forget the rowboat, son. We'll travel in style.
You're gonna need a crew.
Yes, Mr. Thatch.
Well, you'll need engineers and geologists.
Got them all. Best of the best. Gaetan Moliere, Geology and Excavation. Audrey Ramirez, don't let her age fool you.
The name's Sweet. Joshua Sweet, Medical Officer.
Vincenzo Santorini, Demolitions.
Hey, look, I made a bridge.
Lieutenant, take her down.
Diving officer, submerge the ship.
Dive!
Like all our chances for survival rest with you, Mr. Thatch. You and that little book.
So Atlantis was released June 15, 2001. It was directed by Gary Truesdell and Kirk Wise, who you might know of Beauty and the Beast fame, since that's a very hot topic right now. People are mentioning the original, comparing another similar Beauty and the Beast film to the original. And that is quite a fabulous movie. So they are a great Disney directing duo. They also, Don Hahn produced this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
They were kind of the trio of the time. Mm-hmm. Don Hahn, I mean, he's worked with everyone.
He's been around.
Yeah.
In a good way. And he's just has his fingers in all the Disney pies.
Yeah, he really does.
He's a great guy. And he is very, very tall.
He is.
Yes.
I have a picture of me when we went to Destination D a couple of years ago. This man is ginormous.
In a good way.
In a great way. But I mean, it's just like, whoa, you're really tall. And I don't consider myself a short girl. I'm 5'5" and a half, which is, I consider, pretty average. Mm-hmm. I was definitely like not even up to his armpit. It was like, dude, you're huge.
Yep.
Good man too. Really nice. And the fact that he let me take a picture with him, it was just like,
yeah, he was very kind.
He was so nice. And it was like, ah. And every interview I've ever heard of him, he's just a very, you can just tell he's great with people. Mm-hmm. And he's great at getting rid of fires. He's that type of a guy. So, like, he's a guy that you want on your project to get it done.
So both Gary Kirk and Don, that is our little trio here. So the budget was $90 to $120 million estimated. Not quite sure. Disney hasn't quite released those numbers, but that's basically what it would be. And box office did $186.1 million worldwide, which, I mean, it made a profit a little bit, but this movie is largely considered to be kind of... I guess somewhat of a flop, I guess.
I think it's just not what they wanted.
Yes, exactly. Obviously. Because they had string after string after string. Maybe not in the late 90s. Those weren't as big as some in the early 90s. However, it just seemed anything Disney touched at during this period turned to gold. And I really do think that this marks kind of Disney's turning point into that new era of animation. That during the, the 2000s era of Disney, where things weren't so great.
Right. Well, I mean, Treasure Planet was the real low point of all of the of the time period. This one was still, kind of good for par. It was basically a little bit lower than Emperor's New Groove and a little bit lower than Lilo and Stitch. So it was just, quite a bit lower, actually. Lilo and Stitch came out of nowhere as being a huge hit. But... yeah, so it was kind of like, not par for the course. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was. I don't know, for the time.
No, I mean, it didn't help the downward trend. Let's just put it that way. It just continued the downward trend as far as that went. So,
yeah. But as far as I'm looking at a graph that I found that says the gross of the film as compared to an IMDb rating system that they have. And it's like Atlantis also, IMDb was... quite low compared to Emperor's New Groove, which was super high, and even Lilo and Stitch was super high. I don't think that's necessarily fair. Liked this movie, and I don't
know why I think so low. Yeah, we'll talk about it, but I think a lot of people have really low, just a negative feeling about this film. It's not necessarily someone's favorite or in their top echelon of films. And however, going back and watching it, it's not that bad.
It's not.
But it's not that great.
No.
To me, as we were watching it, it had a lot of reused elements. It felt like it had pieces of Pocahontas, pieces of Tarzan, where this character goes to a land with, natives or people who are, you're an outsider there. The younger member of the clan takes you in. The head honcho is not interested in you. I mean, very much felt Pocahontas and Tarzan to me in that way. And so to me, as I was watching this, it just didn't feel fresh. And it had these action moments and this adventure. It was supposed... basically, let's go back to the history of this film. Is they, after Hunchback of Notre Dame, that team decided they wanted to do an action-adventure Disney animated film with no songs and lots of action-adventure. I read on their t-shirts, so this was through Wikipedia that I read this, but on their, every casting crew, they have casting crew t-shirts, which I'll include a link. If I find this one, I'll include a link to it on eBay. These come up from time to time. But this one said, no songs, more explosions. Like that kind of was the vibe they were going for. This was going to be kind of this Indiana Jones. We're going to go on an adventure. And, it's funny because as I was watching the movie, those adventure or even the action sequences were the worst parts of the movie for me.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy the parts where they were just, meandering down to the center of the earth and getting to know the crew. Didn't like that. The action at the end where they're, battling.
Yeah.
Didn't like that either. But those are my initial thoughts on this, and we'll talk a little bit more about it.
Well, what's interesting is I also listened to the director's commentary, and I had all three of them on there, and they mentioned that in test screenings, those, when they asked the kids, because they were looking at the kids more, like, what were the scariest parts? And they mentioned all of those parts that you just said. And then, what were your favorite parts? Oh, obviously, all those parts that you just said. So, I mean, it depends on who your audience is, yeah. I guess.
Well, that was another thing, is that critics and other people, they mentioned that they didn't really who was this marketed to? No one really knew. Was this a teenager movie because it was a little older? Or was it meant for kids? It never quite had a very solid who is your target audience. This is a family film. And so that does hurt a movie because, you know, if it's not very clear, this movie is for me, I'm not going to go see it.
Right.
You know, if it's kind of like straddling two boats, yeah, you might get away with it, but for the most part, you're just going to end up sinking. Which they did, just like it, like the island of Atlantis.
Ooh. I don't remember enjoying this movie when it first came out. As far as like my initial thoughts, I think I remember feeling like really excited about it, being like, oh, this is something to be excited for. But did I see it in theaters? I don't remember. And that's the thing. Like, maybe I did, but maybe I didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I most definitely saw this in theaters. I've mentioned this on previous podcast episodes, but this was like if you were to chart my Disney excitement, it just got higher and higher and higher every year. Just loved everything that Disney put out. Was obsessed with animation. Disney, I was like their number one girl. Still am, but definitely back then. And so I remember when Atlantis was coming out, you know, back then you couldn't really follow a movie more or less than just a year before it came out. You'd go see a Disney movie and they'd give you a trailer for the next Disney movie that was coming out a year from then. And that really was your first taste. And I remember from the moment I saw that, from the moment I saw that, I just thought, this is going to be amazing, you know, because Atlantis, yay, this cool place, and you saw Kida and kind of the different elements of it, and to me, this just was it. I even remember that even before the movie came out, I had an Atlantis coloring book.
Really?
That I bought at the grocery store and would color in it. And
I have that too? I might have.
So excited for it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was ahead of my time, you know. I know. Adult coloring is a big deal now. I was more like teenager coloring, but I was hip. Yeah. I was with it. And I just remember when I saw this movie, I was very much let down. Like, I was the number one person championing Atlantis. Let's go see it. It's going to be amazing. And then everyone saw it, and I'm like, it wasn't that great. And what do you think, Morgan? do I say it was amazing? Well, it really wasn't.
I feel like a lot of the elements were kind of textbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have been where they kind of fell. But at the same time, like, I was listening to the director's commentary. It was a lot better than what it could have been. I was like, whoa.
In what ways?
Well, for example, the opening sequence in the movie. Now you see the very, you know, Atlantis in its heyday at the moment of its downfall when, you know, the floodwaters come in and everybody gets, you know, destroyed. But before, and they actually have this sequence on the DVD where you see it's like they take you to Iceland. And you have the Vikings, and they have it's basically following the story of the Shepherd's Journal as opposed to the actual city. And so that's one of those things, like, it's just really funny because they have a lot of little things. It's like, yeah, it's a lot better now that you focus on that, because that just would have taken things in a much weirder route, and what would have just, like, like, it just would have just kept going. And, like, where's the coming back? That's, you know... I like movies that take you back to the beginning. Like, you had a purpose for that top, not just like a never-ending story that just keeps going from point plot to point plot, or plot point to plot point.
So let's dive into this movie, shall we?
Let's do that. So first off, I want to talk about the fact that they actually made up a language, Atlantean, for this whole thing. And I like languages. I like learning about I would consider myself a grammar nerd. My mom is a grammar Nazi, and so I take pride in knowing how to structure a sentence. And so it always just made me interested, like, okay, this guy. So they contacted a guy named Mark Orkrand, and he was the one that between the years of, according to Wikipedia, between the years of 1996 and 2001, he created this language. And it, like, has, like, writing systems and grammar and the whole shebang. Like, this guy went all out. I was like, man, this is a lot of, like, lot of rules. He basically, like, that they had somebody else come in and actually do a written script for it. So it's just really funny. As I started, I went out for like 20 minutes. I was just going through this whole Wikipedia page of like trying to figure out how this whole language worked. And the more I got into it, the less I cared anymore. It was just one of those moments. But I will give a couple tidbits of how this goes. So it's kind of like in the lane of like Spanish or Portuguese, where
romantic language,
the romance languages, where it's you have, for example, the word comer, to eat, and then if you do like the past tense, it's comí, in Spanish. So basically com, and then you have the I at the end, which has its own meaning. You change the ending, it then changes the who in the sentence and whatever. So it goes subject, object, verb. So for example, the podcast Morgan and Chelsea recorded. So it has a very strict word order, and it didn't deviate from that way at all. So anyway, if you have any interest, you know, that may last more than 20 minutes, go ahead and check out the Wikipedia article. But after 20 minutes, I was like, all right, I'm done.
So one thing that I think is funny about this language is that it is a direct, like, letter-to-letter translation. I'm like, really? I have a hard time believing that this ancient language, just their A happens to coordinate with our A, and their B coordinates with our B. You know, I mean, that is the most rudimentary. I mean, there are more nuances to the language, but as far as the alphabet goes, it matches up perfectly with an English alphabet for the most part. There's a few other little words in there, but I just got a kick out of it because in the film, he's like, oh, just one letter was wrong.
In Ireland. Change the R.
Iceland. Like, of course, that got lost in translation. We just happen to have two countries that are right near each other with just one letter apart.
There you go. Oh, man. How about Iceland? Like, I like how they just kind of cut that whole section out. The search for the Shepherd's Journal out.
No, it's good because one thing that I do enjoy about this movie is that you really do jump into the action.
Yeah.
Like, I love the beginning because I love how you get to know Milo, and I love that first scene where it's just him and he's a gentleman and he's doing his pitch. And you see the shadows, and then I think you can kindly get, you know, midway through, you get a sense that, okay, I don't think he's really talking to anyone because he keeps, like, throwing in things indicating this isn't a live demonstration.
Right.
And then you see, oh, sad, he just works in the boiler room, and oh, he is a fledgling linguist who's working in a museum and trying to, you know, find this. Cartographer?
Cartographer, yes.
And
they put him in the boiler room.
I really do like Milo in these beginning scenes. I think he's really endearing. I love his animation and I love his design. When I think about Atlantis, like, one of the main things I think of are Milo's hands. I know it's really bizarre, but his hands, in just the way that these characters are designed, they're very much, like, squared off and angular. Not a lot of curves as far as, you know, things, the way things are in this film. And so I just always think of his hands because they're very, like, pointy.
His fingernails are all triangles.
Yes.
All of them have that. I loved Michael J. Fox in it, too.
He did a great job.
Really good job. I mean, there's a lot of lines in there that he had to do, and he had to, like, he put so much just endearing nuances to his voice, and I just really liked him. And I've always liked Michael J. Fox. He was one of my childhood favorites. Like, you can't go wrong with Back to the Future. He's gotten quite a bit more work the last year, once the 30 years later.
Yes. Gotta hit up those conventions.
Yes.
So one thing, I was watching this on Amazon and okay. they have this thing called X-ray.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just really funny during that part. So what it is if you're watching it, you can turn on X-ray, and anytime a character is speaking, it will kind of flash on the screen, or you can hover over it, who their voice actor is.
Yeah.
And it really is like scene by scene. Like if someone stops talking, that person's picture disappears.
Yeah.
And they start talking, then it appears again. And as I was watching this, the scene where he, basically the poor, you know, the board
of the board meeting,
the board of the the board of directors for the museum. It's so sad because they're just not giving him time of day. They're done with him. They purposely move the meeting, and then when he actually makes it, they oh crap, how do he find us? And they're all running, and just during that scene, I was looking at the X-ray, and it said additional voices, Jim Cummings. I'm like, yay, our man,
Jim. Oh man, he's great. Well, they had a lot of bigger, like a lot of names in there that they always try to throw.
Yeah,
in.
David Ogden Steers was one of the main guys, and he's just a great. I mean, to me, when I listen to him, I know he's done tons of things for Disney, but it's just like there's always a hint of Cogsworth in there.
yes.
So, like we were saying, I really like that they cut out the whole Shepherd's Journal part.
Right.
And we just jump into the action. We get a little bit about Milo. We get his backstory. You know, we go to this old man's house, you know, who's a crazy kook yogi.
Well, first, let's talk about Helga.
I love Helga. Why doesn't Helga have more fan art? Why doesn't she get more attention and praise? She's an awesome woman.
She's, well, aside from the fact that she ends up being a villain, you know.
Well, that's even better.
Well, as I was going through, I was like, I would love to cosplay her, but I feel like everyone would just think I'm trying to be Kim Possible, like a blonde Kim Possible. Like,
no, but just... she's like pretty buff and ripped.
Yeah.
You know, like Snow White.
Yes. Snow White got ripped.
No, she's very muscular and very athletic looking and blonde. I love myself a good blonde. She's just a great Disney woman.
Her voice is awesome.
I love her voice because it's a little deeper. And she also kind of reminded me of Mirage in that scene where she's dressed in that black dress. And she's like walking him through and giving him the lowdown on this mysterious guy. You know, like her employer. Mm-hmm. So I felt some Incredibles vibes right there. Even though this is pre-Incredibles, I liked her a lot. And when I saw her, I was like, oh man, I forgot about her. But she is definitely a lost Disney leading lady.
Yeah.
But she kind of also reminded me a little bit of Sergeant Calhoun. But Sergeant Calhoun had a little bit more prominence in, you know, more people would probably remember her than they did Helga. And that's probably because, you know, Atlantis is not...
Yeah.
Has been forgotten, just like the city, by most people.
Well, you know, she walks in. Like, you walk into his apartment, and he's looking for his cat. Where's Fluffy?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you see this, like, sexy lady off in the back. And apparently, they were talking about how she was supposed to, like, throw her dress over her knee, like, hike her dress up a little bit more. And they're like, nah, it's a little too much for a kid's film.
But it's not a kid's film. That's the thing. I guess... Like, we don't like when people say these are kids' films, but ultimately, I guess when the director and the producer say this is a kids' film, I guess we have to agree.
Yeah, but it was just really funny. She's like, who's your employer? And it's like, you can obviously a gigolo. Like, who is this woman in my house?
Yeah.
Oh, man. And, well, you go in and you first meet Mr. Whitlock and John Mahoney, who, I love him. He's from one of my favorite sitcoms ever, Frasier. Like, I love him so much. But he's off there, like, he's just this very strange,
wacky
old dude that, like, has, like, a walk-in fireplace, hashtag goals. Like, man, what the heck is this? Oh, and then also, those giant fish, those are actually coelacanths.
Ah.
They were thought to be extinct, but right around that time is when they found some off the coast of Madagascar. And so he's like, well, of course, he's got some coelacanths in there.
Yes, but then conveniently we've been hearing about the Shepherd's Journal. Shepherd's Journal, this is the key.
Yes, we must find it.
Oh, here it is. Your dad gifted it to me in here. Oh.
But that's really not... Forget about Iceland.
Yes.
Moving on.
Yes, exactly. You know, so then we really do jump in the action. We meet the crew. And this is the part where I guess I kind of get lost because I feel there's almost too many people thrown at you at once.
Yeah.
Like, here's her, and she's the mechanic, and she's the cook, and she's the crazy old lady, and she's her, blah, blah, blah. And here's the guy who's basically like Clayton from Tarzan. And, you know.
Right.
So let's just dive into him. So we have the mole.
Mr. Mole.
Corey Burton, which that's a great voice. He's great guy.
He's so great. Well, you know, Commander Rourke, James Gardner, and then
Clayton.
Yeah, he's the Clayton character.
Because it's totally, like, this is another similarity, is you have, like, the guy who's supposed to, you know, lead the way into this new adventure land.
Mercenary.
Yeah, and basically is going in there to kill or take something from these people or creatures, right? Which he did. But we don't know that.
It was the prequel to the nowadays Disney villain who starts out being your friend, but at the end is no longer our friend.
Exactly.
The villain in disguise. Helga was Claudia Christian. We talked about her. John Mahoney was Preston B. Whitmore. We liked him. Sweet.
Dr. Sweet.
Dr. Sweet.
I love Dr. Sweet. He is a great Disney doctor.
Yes.
I don't know very many of them, but I just loved his character. Kind of wish we had more of him. He was like so sassy and funny. And he was one of my favorites of the crew.
Yeah. So Phil Morris was the voice actor for him. And he was actually not supposed to be the regular actor. He was just kind of like a stand-in voice. But he did so well that they're like, no, keep him.
Yeah.
He's good, man.
He was great.
He was great. So next we have Vinny, and that is voiced by Don Novello. For him, they would never even give him lines. They would just say, he needs to tell his background. And so he just goes ahead and he's like, all right. So he just goes off and he like made up the whole flower shop thing. And he made up the whole background story.
Yeah, it's like Robin Williams.
On the spot. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're fantastic.
That's awesome.
It really made me appreciate all of these guys. I mean, just very talented folks. I really liked the voice cast. I really liked the whole ensemble, and it really was an ensemble cast. Mm-hmm. And I felt like you did get to know them a little bit more, and you kind of got to like them all, and they all just had their very distinct personalities, mm-hmm. which I felt added a lot of roundness to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, I don't think it would have had any charm at all. Like, that was very important to have some charm for this film. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't think it was a bad film. I liked the film. It wasn't something
it's not as bad as it seems to be remembered.
Right, yeah. And I think it just, the replay value is just kind of lower. But it's still like a good film, I think.
One thing that was a miss for me was the voice of Audrey Ramirez. And just Audrey's character in general.
Yeah.
I guess her voice was okay. But I just didn't really resonate with her character.
Yeah.
Her character kind of felt like certain parts of the ensemble felt like super forced. Like, oh, we're going to have all this diversity and we're going to have this female Hispanic mechanic.
Yeah.
Which I've seen in Turbo recently. But it just, and she's like this teenager, and I get what they were trying to do with her.
Yeah.
But something was amiss for me with that particular character. But I also did like the Wilhelmina, who's the old lady who's smoking, which I appreciated that they showed her smoking, because I feel like even in that era, I'd be like, oh, smoking's bad, which it is. But we can't show someone smoking, but I mean, come on.
Well, they said we were very secure in the fact that we didn't think that she glamorized smoking.
Yes, and she's so old and wrinkly and puckered that it was like, ugh.
And the part was like, yeah, you forget your pajamas? I sleep in the nude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, you're going to need these. She sleepwalks. Like, yeah. Oh, jeez. Like, obviously, this lady is crazy. But she's always talking to Margie. Like, Margie seems like a very good friend.
Oh, yeah.
I need
one of those.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and then, oh my, Jebediah Cookie Farnsworth, his voice was given by Jim Varney.
Okay, so Jim Varney, he does the voice.
He's Ernest.
Yeah. Well, no, but he's also Slinky.
Yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
Toy Story, the whole time, I'm like, who is Slinky Dog? Slinky Dog.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's because it was him. So he recently passed, so he was not able to be in the third Toy Story film.
Oh, Jim Varney. And what was really funny is they apparently had only like a couple lines for him, but they always booked about 3 hours of record time
uh-huh.
for him because they just liked hearing his stories. That's awesome. Like every time they brought him in, it's like at least 3 hours because he ended up doing like all this stuff. And at the very end of the director's commentary, I mean, like the very last minute, you have to go back and listen. They, all three of them, go ahead and they sing this song that apparently he sang in one of them. Like all three of them were like singing this like just got down off the mountain type of a song.
Oh my goodness.
It's really funny. So you should definitely like look at the commentary, the last minute of it, just in case, because that one was well worth it.
All right. You know, we see this ensemble cast and they're each have their, you know, like you said, we get to know them over time. But initially I felt overwhelmed because there were like so many thrown into us. But by the end of it, it's like, oh, okay. They all have their cute little quirks and whatnot and their own personalities. And you go to like, you learn to like each one of them. You know, Vinny with his dynamite and Helga, she's just a tough lady. And the old Wilhelmina with her crazy, crass comments. And it's a good little group. It is quite a good little group. They have, you know, malintent.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Which we later find out, but more on that later.
But, yeah, so you're on the boat. I mean, the submarine, it was just, it was interesting because it was, this is one of those films that was a hybrid of CGI and 2D. So it just, you know, submerges itself and the camera does this big old sweep across and you've got the whole machine, the boat is CGI, but you've got, you know, Milo looking out the window, who is a traditional CG or traditional 2D character, and like all these different things. It's a very interesting era.
Yes. When I think of this era, it's around what, 97 to 2001?
Yeah.
Very heavy with, okay, CG, it's new, it's cool. What, how can
they're
we implement
to hold
it?
On to it
still. Yes, we still want 2D, but it can offer really cool aspects and cool things,
right?
And so it's a lot of CGI vehicles,
yes,
which work and don't work. I think in Anastasia they're super clunky and not so great, but in this one I was particularly watching them for that effect.
Yeah,
and if you're watching them looking for, is this a CGI character, you can see it.
Yeah,
it's very clear. But I felt that this did blend quite well if you weren't really looking at it.
Once they've gotten into the trek, basically they've submerged, they've gone down, you meet up with the Leviathan, who's the like the guardian of Atlantis, try to keep them there. Oh, there's ships from every era here. Like first off, I'm like look at those
red flag.
Well, red flag, yes, but as far as like, if you're a historian, you would spend all day just right there.
Oh yeah.
Like, let's look at all these. This is amazing. But you know, at this point in time, they basically destroyed this whole ship. So it was a cast or a crew of 200, now down to like 12. Like, and it just doesn't seem like anybody really cared.
Yeah.
I mean, they did their little vigil with the single candle and everything like that. But like the whole thing, I'm like, there's just a lot of people who just died.
This was just mass, you know, passing away.
But they're like, we don't need them. Story-wise,
too many to animate. And hey, we never got to know their names. So,
right, exactly.
You know, you can't really be that sad.
Oh my gosh. So now it's like five boats, now into one. Like, did that just not bother anybody? They did have a visual. They did have their little, like, eulogy type thing at the end. But
so that's one of the things that's the problem with this movie, is that it kind of just rushes through things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, we got to have this middle section where we're going down to Atlantis. I guess it's more of the beginning. And, oh, to make it really seem hardcore and that it's such a trial, let's just kill off a bunch of people.
Right.
But at the same time, it doesn't have the emotional weight that it needs for us to care.
Yeah.
It's like, they're gone. Cool. It's now we still have the people who we actually know their names. So move on. Carry on.
Yeah. Now we know that, like, we did get that out of it. We know their names now. We know who all the crew is and their little quirks and everything. And, you know, it's just, you finally, it really doesn't start, though, until you meet the Atlanteans. Mm-hmm. Atlanteans. I have a hard time saying that sometimes. The Atlanteans. And you see them, like, jumping around in their, like, big old masks and everything. And she, like, reveals herself. It's like, oh, Kida.
Mm-hmm.
And Kida, can I just say, she is the forgotten princess.
Oh, yes. Legitimately.
Legitimately forgotten. Nobody cares about Kida. And I'm like, she's
amazing.
Cool.
She's beautiful.
Yeah.
She,
I mean, she should have not let I mean, she probably shouldn't have cut her bangs like that. But other than that,
hey, we all have bad hair that we regret, right?
We always have bad haircuts.
I mean, and she does have that horrible layer right in the middle of her hair, right, too. It's like, oh, do you have extensions? And that's your real hair, and you didn't blend them very well. I mean, she could use a little hint, but you know, she's kind of a blend of a few princesses. She's a darker skinned princess, you know, but she has that cool Elsa hair.
Yeah.
So you mix of like Pocahontas and Elsa. I mean, obviously Elsa wasn't around then, but I'm just making this.
Right.
And then she has, when she's underwater, she has the hair of Ariel.
Yes, it's true.
And
everybody wants the hair of Ariel.
And she also has a mix of Pocahontas in the way that she moves and climbs up mountains and trees and things like that.
Cat-like.
So, yes.
But she is really the forgotten princess, and I feel sad about that because, like, she's a cool princess.
You know, and it's all due to the fact that this movie wasn't well received. It didn't do well. Like you were talking about the boats and whatnot, Disney did have a underwater adventure ride established and kind of ready in the works for Disneyland and the parks. But they quietly scrapped that. And obviously, this was probably meant... obviously, it was meant for the 2000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah.
You know, submarines. They were going to... That had been... you know, out of commission for a while. They're going to repurpose that. And they said, we'll just leave this a relic over here. We're not going to invest any money in that.
Now we're going to change to Finding Nemo.
Yeah. A few years later, right?
The actual moneymaker on this one. Yeah. So, it's fine. Moving on to the king of Atlantis, Mr. Leonard Nimoy.
Yes, I don't enjoy that he doesn't have, like, irises that bother
He's
anyone.
He's blind.
I know, but it bothers me.
This is the greatest joke during the commentary. He's like, he would have been a teacher, but he had no pupils. Oh my gosh. Yeah, he was blinded by the light at the very beginning. And so that's like, he was legitimately blind. And I guess that's just what happened with that light. Don't look into the light.
That makes a lot more sense now.
It's so pretty. Oh, man. But
he's great.
He's Leonard Nimoy. He's just top-notch. Top-notch. He's got so much. Every time he talks, you can just hear the regret in his voice of the time. You can hear the, like, fear that came from that time.
And he's ultimately hiding something, which we don't know until, you know, the big reveal, but...
Yeah, he did a great job. And then right after that, obviously, everyone goes bad. So they go and they have their little dive.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you speak the language. You know, so that was one thing is, okay, we're gonna right the wrongs we made with Pocahontas because Pocahontas could magically understand the language because of the leaves and the colors of the wind. But, like, no one really bought it, right? But this, their language is rooted in all languages, sort of like the Tower of Babel.
Right.
And so that's why they can understand and conveniently speak every language. So
that is my, if you guys remember my Incredibles episode when we did, like, what was the Roto Supers? That was my ideal superpower, to understand every
language. So you
want to
be an Atlantean?
I do. Or Rosita Stone.
Oh, I miss Mason. I so do good.
Oh, man. go back and listen to that episode. It's a good one. But yeah, this is the point where they've done their underwater sea exploration. They've kind of figured out what the actual power source was of the star.
We meet the Atlanteans, and then they're like, oh, you speak the language. Go check out the girl and you know, get in her inner circle.
Yeah.
And she's interested in him and the fact that he has answers she wants to know. And he's interested in her that she has answers that he
can
wants
read.
To know. Yeah. That is very unfortunate. They've lost the ability to read.
That is so unfortunate.
They actually have the ability to read. They just, you know, can't.
They've, over thousands of years, they've just stopped reading, I guess.
That seems like something that you're telling me. I feel like dad just forgot how to read. I feel like that's something you can't unlearn it.
He can't.
Well, he's blind.
He's blind.
And I'm sure they didn't make any Braille books. Okay. So he can read.
But he didn't teach his four-year-old daughter at the time. Well, maybe she was 400, you know, as long as they were living.
I want to be one of them.
Seriously. After thousands of years later, you're still looking great, man. So everyone goes bad. And then you have the point where they finally find where the heart of Atlantis is. So they go down into the little water elevator thing, and now obviously, like, Kida is having the same fate as her mom. She gets abducted by the light. And okay, here's the thing. When she, like, walks right directly under it and is looking straight up, and you have that that's just
effect.
That well, it's just like that point of view, or like you're just looking straight up. It always bugged me because I never liked that shot. I just felt like it was just too weird, and like her stomach poked out weirdly. And
I'm sure, you know, they thought this was such a cool shot from above. Nope, Chelsea was not a fan.
I was not a fan.
Can I talk about before that?
Yeah.
I loved the reveal about where the heart of Atlantis was.
Yeah.
I thought it was very clever that, you know, the A and you had the little dot right there. It was the little riddle of the king's eye can see the heart of Atlantis. You know, unfortunate that the basically Clayton, what's his name? He's like a mix of Clayton and McCleach to me.
McCleach. Rourke.
It's just a shame that, I mean, Rourke, I mean, hey, he's no scrub. He's a smart guy. So he figures it out and then they head down there.
Yes.
You know, this part, you start to lose me a bit because there's a lot of elements that I'm like, what is happening? They get resolved and they get explained by the dad later. Like, oh, she's had the same fate as the mom. And at first you're like, wait, what? Why is she going to this thing? What's happening?
Well, the thing that bugged me was right when they're like putting her in the little casing. And, like, the Atlanteans don't do anything.
Ah, yes.
They're just kind of standing there, like, taking our heart.
Well, but what is that going to be? Like, what if, honestly, if you're working these, you know, treasure hunters, what you're going to sell this woman? Like, come on.
Well,
it makes no sense.
They're going to sell, it's a power source. And so that they're hinting at, but this is once again that I learned in the commentary. Like, I had to go to the commentary to learn these things. Like, they were hinting at the fact that they were going to be able to sell this power source to the highest bidder of, like, whatever country decides.
Oh, that was not clear at all.
No, yeah.
No, I thought they were just looking for the power source to sell it as a shiny trinket.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just something to sell and make money.
Yeah, and then you have the part where he's, like, driving away. Did you understand that whole joke of, like, P.T. Barnum was right. Did you get that?
I guess I did not pay attention to it.
Okay, there's this one part where he's driving away after everybody's decided they've had their conscience cleared. Yes, I'm going to stay behind and help Milo. And so everybody, like, leaves.
I don't know if the... Time out. I don't know if that necessarily redeems anyone in my book.
Really?
Like, you have a change of heart at the last minute and now I'm supposed to like you? No. This whole time, you were all against him. You were conspiring against him. And it's like, oh, just kidding. I feel bad.
They kept saying, oh, there weren't supposed to be people down here.
Yes. This should have. Even Helga.
This changes everything.
Yeah.
This changes nothing. You know, so he's basically just the kook that keeps going. Yeah. And everybody else is just like, oh, we're getting paid for this.
Yeah, exactly.
This is not really what I signed on for, but it's I signed on.
Mm-hmm.
So... Anyway, the P.T. Barnum quote is, there's a sucker born every minute. And so after everybody leaves, he's like, P.T. Barnum was right. You suckers. You know? I was like, oh, okay. There are fun little quotes that they threw in to bring in the time period. But at the same time, it was hard. That's something that you would have to look up. And then they go into the next scene, which is the fight scene. You know, everybody's like, oh, we're going to go get him. Yeah. Oh, well, no, they go and they figure out, they go and talk to the king.
Yes.
And then the king finally fills in the gaps and, like, tells you what's going on.
And you're like, ah, this makes sense. I see.
Ah,
I see. Yes. He was one of the causes of this, which is very unfortunate. And yet another reason why we have the overprotective father, just like in Moana, you know.
Yes.
Who has done something bad and now is protecting the daughter from doing a similar thing. You know, here, he's done something horrible, basically destroyed a civilization.
Right.
And now is protecting his daughter from, you know. Likewise, doing so.
Right. Yeah, that's basically just what it is.
So yeah, they go into this big fight scene. It to me doesn't mean much. I felt like this whole movie, for the most part, was rushed.
Yeah,
we rush into going on the adventure. That goes pretty quick. We don't spend that much time with the coolest part about this movie and the whole thing. It's called Atlantis.
Right.
I feel like we only really have 10 minutes of exploring, you know, the world of Atlantis, and then we move on to. Oh, we've kidnapped the princess, and now she's, you know, our
She's our trinket.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, fight scene. And I would have liked to, I guess this is why I like Pocahontas. I feel like Pocahontas has a really good flow.
Yeah.
Like you, to me, I care more about the, you know, Pocahontas and her tribe than, well, I guess we equally learn about both, but I felt like we didn't get to learn as much about the people of Atlantis. It's more they just tell us like, oh yeah, here's what happened here, here's what happened here, here's what happened here. Bye.
Yeah. And this fight scene, as mentioned before, I mean, it's got a lot going on. This was one part where like Rourke like jumps off of the hot air balloon.
Yeah.
And he's like swinging on this rope. And I'm like, rope burn! Ow! And then he like knocks over Helga, knocks her out of the whole thing.
Oh, doesn't even care about
doesn't
her.
Doesn't even care at all. And it's just like, oh my gosh. Like, well, that the thing is, like, how in the world did she live? Like, that was, that fall had to have been like, I don't know, 100 feet at least. And she lived just to enough to say, it's nothing personal. Boom.
Yeah, yeah.
You're dead too. I just felt like
it's cool when bad guy kills another bad guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's all good. That. Oh man! And then they finish him. You know, he in turn
finish him.
He turns into a walking ball of something or other.
That was another question I had. What is happening here?
It obviously was not meant for his blood.
Yes,
royal blood only.
But still,
yeah, it was weird. So there's the big explosion. Vinny says, wasn't me. And then the volcano is about to erupt. They're coming out. And this was actually one of my favorite parts is when they, where the protectors of Atlantis come out of the ground. And it reminded me, I just watched the Harry Potters again. Uh-huh. And it reminded me of in the last, you know, the fight scene where you got Miss Professor McGonagall. She's like, always wanted to use that spell. Oh, and then it wraps it up really nicely in the fact that, oh, good, now they survived once again. Mm-hmm. Not sure how, but their power source knows all and supplies all that they need.
Well, and then I just love the part where, you know, they're leaving and they're like, is there anything else we could do? And
I just wish there were more we could do. Oh, you're good.
Yeah, you're good. It shows a giant, basically, pile of money.
Yeah.
Like a mound, almost a little mound of, big mound of money. A
giant mound of money.
It's just, yeah, we're good. I thought that was hilarious.
They all have their own crystal. Hey, they all have their own thing.
They came down here for gold and riches. And
that's what they got.
That's what they got. So, hey. And hey, everyone gets their own crystal. Souvenirs. Yeah. Nice. This is another thing that I'm sure Disney at the theme parks thought, oh, everyone's going to want to have their own crystal. I'm pretty sure you can't even find that at the parks anymore. But, man,
I'm not even sure if did they even go through with it and have
it? No, probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I'm glad to know that Fluffy the cat got taken care of afterward, though.
Oh, of course. Hey, there may be some parts of this movie that don't make sense, but they made sure to cover their bases on the cat.
On the cat at the beginning. So Whitmore is at the end. It was really sweet, though. I thought the ending was really nice with the picture of, like,
yeah.
I hope that you think that this is, you know, enough proof. Sure convinced me.
Yeah, that was cute.
I was like, that was nice.
Hell, and then everyone in their, like, rich clothes with their jewels. And then they're coming up with their fake story about what happened to everyone. So, good times.
So, all in all, I would have to say, as far as a rating, I'm not sure. I give this 3 stars just for the fact they did follow the recipe really well.
But they were missing the secret sauce.
I know, the secret sauce. I mean, there's only so much you can do without it.
Yeah, I agree. So I exactly give it 3 stars.
Yeah.
It was good, actually a lot better than I remembered, but not good enough that I ever need to go back and watch it again for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Give it a couple years.
Yeah, and I felt that it was very rushed. Like, it was actually a longer Disney movie than others. It was maybe close to 1 hour and 45 minutes. Yet at the same time, I felt so rushed. Every scene, just we had to get from here to here to here to here to here.
Yeah.
You know, Milo is a great character. And Kida, man, I wish I could learn a little bit more about her. But nope. She turns Helga. Into a Helga. Yeah, can we have just a Helga movie?
The like, prequel.
Helga. Yes, yes. Let's do it.
How she got ripped. Her workout videos. Yeah.
Someone please fan art that.
Just like a full series of Helga workout videos.
Yes.
Like that is insane. Prequels. That's all we need. Oh my gosh.
All right, so on to our voicemails. Woohoo!
Hello, this is Alex calling in to give my review of Atlantis: The Lost Empire. In her YouTube review of Brother Bear, wrote a writer Rachel Wagner subtitles the film, "Make a Different Choice." Unfortunately, I think that this subtitle can be applied to Atlantis as well. This film had so much potential, and there were so many talented people working on it, that it is difficult to understand why everything could not come together. But it didn't, and Atlantis is, as a result, one of my least favorite Disney films. The plot isn't that memorable or even comprehensible. I didn't fully understand it until I looked up the plot online years after I first watched it. The characters aren't that memorable, and I didn't really like the animation style that much, despite the fact that it was unique for Disney. I did like the score. I thought that was memorable, and it stuck with me. But other than that, I can't think of anything to praise. I give this film 2.5 stars.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. And thanks to Maggie for suggesting Atlantis: The Lost Empire for our patron pick. Our next episode is going to be over Dumbo. So Woo-hoo. Be sure to send in your voicemails, rotoscopers.com/voicemails or 406-646-6575. We are going to be doing that. And there's a lot of really awesome patron picks coming up. We're excited to do them. And if you would like to have your own patron pick, go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon to go check out the perks of becoming a Rotoscopers patron. And it's a great way to support the show. You can also support the show by shopping on Amazon using our Amazon affiliate link. Rotoscopers.com/Amazon is where you can start your shopping and get everything you need there. We also have t-shirts left. There's only about 15 left. So if you are an extra small or a large and extra large, then these are the shirts for you. If you're a small or medium, well, I'm very sorry. We might do another run of shirts at another point of time. But as far as clearing out our inventory of the Roto shirts, extra small and large, extra large, we're looking for you. Go to rotoscopers.com/shirt. By the way, they're only 99 cents. And then you just pay shipping to your country. There's a little calculator that you put in and it automatically adjusts the shipping based on where you live. So we're not getting paid anything on the shipping. And basically, it's 99 cents just to 99 cents. Why not? So go get the shirts. They're limited. They're running out.
15. Extremely limited.
Extremely.
Awesome. And also, if you like the show and you think other people would like the show as well, and you listen to this on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, go on there and please give us your feedback on there. It does help the podcast. You know, there was a point in time where we were getting so many at it, like all at once, that they even added us as a feature on iTunes.
Yes.
Because we were getting so many at that time.
Yes. And so you're other reasons too, so but they do make a difference, and that's how other people and fellow animation addicts can find the show. Also, if you can't do any of those, least you can do, tell your friends.
Yeah. Follow us on social media too. You can also follow each of us at our individual locations on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Also my website. So you just type in our names. We've got Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson.
Boom.
Boom. Well, guys, it has been one fantastic episode. One right after another. We love it. The Nerdy Couch is a great place to be. Hope you join us next time. But until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.